everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And once again, with me today, I have the Responsible Eating and Living co-founder, Gary DeMattei.
Hey,
hi, Gary.
Karen, it's great to be back. Last week was a fun show. I couldn't wait to get back this week because I know we're doing our month of The Vegan Artist's Way. And there's art in everything, especially in the culinary arts, especially in the vegan culinary arts. And we're going to be talking a lot about food today. My favorite subject. And I know it's your favorite subject.
It's your favorite subject?
Yeah.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, I thought that it would be good to have Gary back again and again and again and have the listeners out there just get a snippet of what we talk about all the time.
Yeah, so we're doing some restructuring at Responsible Eating and Living, and we want a lot of everybody know that. Those that visit our website, Karen has stopped her daily blog. It's all about food. No, excuse me. Karen has stopped her daily blog.
It's called What Vegans Eat.
What Vegans Eat. But we're going to be taking What Vegans Eat and moving it to the next level. We're going to be doing some very exciting things. So it's not going to go away for long. But we want to hear from you. What do you want to hear about with respect to what vegans eat? And I'm sure some of you out there are curious. I know I'm curious. I want to hear what other vegans eat. So we're going to be doing some of that, sharing what you eat, some of our listeners. And also we're going to be doing more video.
Video.
Video. Everybody loves video. But we want you to know that What Vegans Eat will just be taking a little bit of a break and coming back strong at the end of the month.
I need a break.
No, you don't.
I need a drink. No, I need.
Speaking of drinks, let's talk about the weather is chilly out here. Although it has been kind of mild.
It could be worse.
Right. But let's say.
But 28 degrees Fahrenheit is kind of chilling.
Let's talk about some great vegan drinks made with plant milks. And then we'll segue into a subject about plant milks.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So we were at Peace Food yesterday.
First of all, didn't we have a great time last week on the show?
Oh, my God. With Andrea Young of Sweet Vegan. Yes.
I hope everybody had a wonderful Valentine's Day or what are they calling it now? They're calling it all kinds of things. They don't call it Valentine's Day
anymore.
Whatever
you celebrate, we hope it's wonderful.
We hope it was wonderful. But Andrea, yeah, let's talk about Andrea a little bit because I know that was exciting. And she and we found out that we had some listeners and they liked the show. So that was fun, right?
That's right. And we got some good feedback from the show.
We did.
Yeah.
We got some excellent feedback.
Yeah.
Everybody likes chocolate.
I think that's the message. Do more shows about chocolate.
Vegan chocolate.
Vegan and eat some.
Yeah. So anyway, that was fun last week. If you haven't listened to that show, you can catch it at the archives.
That's right.
Go to the responsibleeatingandliving.com homepage and click on
radio.
On radio.
Yeah.
And you can hear that one. I think it's Andrea's picture is on there, too.
Okay, back to
So
beverages and hot drinks. It's really nice when it's cold outside to sip something cozy and warm. So we were at Peace Foods restaurant yesterday.
Right, Peace Foods. There's two locations. We were at the Union Square location.
Yeah, 11th Street.
11th Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a ginger soy latte that is really yummy.
And they also have a Brazil nut chai, which is no longer made with Brazil nut milk. It's made with cashew
milk. Almond.
Yeah, and that's I had that and you had the
yeah, they just need to change their menu and they haven't for a long time, so
the ginger you had the ginger
Soy latte.
Yeah, and it was great.
They also have a ginger turmeric latte.
Right.
But I just like the ginger.
Big, huge steaming mugs of steamed plant milk with lots of wonderful flavors in it. Mine with chai, yours with ginger.
Yeah, and we have a recipe at Responsible Eating and Living for a ginger turmeric latte.
Right.
And it's pretty simple to make, and you can make it to your own taste. You can use fresh ginger. You can use fresh turmeric. You could use dried ginger powder and turmeric powder and just add enough so that you get the taste, but it's not too much because turmeric and ginger can both be very strong and overwhelming. You don't want to add too much, but they're both so good for you.
Yes.
And a little sweetener of your choice.
Right. We like putting date paste.
We're into date paste these days.
Yeah, date paste in some hot.
And yes, we have a recipe at responsibilityandliving.com for date paste. It's pretty simple.
Absolutely.
It's just dates and water, and you boil it up and you blend it.
Right.
And it's like crack.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's really good.
Not that we know what crack is like.
No, I don't know.
We've been told crack is addictive.
I just like saying it. It's fun to say.
But I mean, now, since Breaking Bad and all of those programs have come out, people aren't so touchy about the word crack anymore because it was like the primetime show of...
Are they touchy about the word date?
Could be.
Could be. Anyway, date paste is really yummy, and it makes a great whole food sweetener.
Right. So that's kind of an après-ski moment here at It's All About Food.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about having hot cocoa or something. And you can have hot cocoa with a plant-based milk.
Right.
And, of course, you know the difference between hot chocolate and hot cocoa.
Let's hear it.
I don't think most people know. But the hot cocoa is made with the cocoa powder.
Right.
Which is like defatted. And then hot chocolate is made from chocolate.
A bar of chocolate.
Right. It's like thick and syrupy and just amazingly rich.
What do you prefer? Hot cocoa or hot chocolate? Good question.
You're making me think now. I think it really depends on the moment.
Right.
Because they're very different. And the hot chocolate, it can be amazing, but it might be too much.
Right. But yeah. I really like the thicker the better for me with respect to hot chocolate.
Okay.
That's why I like making it with cashew milk.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about cinnamon in chocolate?
I don't have any.
You don't have any feeling
about
like
it at
all. For or against?
It's fine. A little touch of cinnamon is fine. A little touch of chili powder or a hot pepper
powder.
Yeah,
that would be good.
Really,
I'm not fond of chocolate with cinnamon, just so you know.
Okay. Well, we don't have any of that around here anyway. But you are fond of chocolate on Ticino. I mean, cinnamon on Ticino. You like it on your cappuccino.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do like cinnamon.
Yeah.
I just don't like it in my chocolate.
You like it when we froth the plant milk and pour it in with the and we make cappuccinos. You like that?
Yeah, very good.
Or you like it dusted with a little chocolate.
Yeah, either or.
Yeah. And the movie, Chocolat, was awfully good.
There's another Chocolat movie out,
yeah,
too,
I
but
saw
we
that.
Haven't seen
we
it.
We haven't seen it, yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. Let's talk about the darker side, or maybe it's the brighter side now, of plant-based milks, because there's a wonderful news story. It was actually...
Yeah.
Published on the website called DairyReporter.com. And Dairy Reporter is a serious web publication. I never read it. I just discovered it because of this one particular article that's now like popping out at all the vegan sites. There's a Scandinavian company, Helsa Foods, and they make oat plant-based milk-like products, oat-based yogurt, I think is what is their main product. And they're helping dairy farms here in the United States convert to farmlands to grow organic oats.
Yeah.
And this is really exciting. They're starting in upstate New York.
And that is very exciting.
They're converting 300 acres of organic land to grow premium oats.
Right.
And they're creating a guidebook and a video that will serve as a blueprint for others to do the same.
Yeah, so you're right. They are the maker of the first and only 100% clean oat milk yogurts. And they're offering an alternative to organic dairy farmers to grow organic oats with the same method used in Scandinavia that results in a cleaner, more nutritious, and higher quality oat crop.
Yeah, it takes those folks up there in the Scandinavian countries. I remember, I think it was in the 70s, Finland was encouraging their dairy farmers to convert their fields to grow raspberries because they found their citizens were getting too fat and were consuming too much fat and too much dairy. And they actually had this concerted effort. I've never read a follow-up on what happened after this push, and that was a long time ago. But it's interesting to see that another group...
Right. Now, here's a quote from...
is doing something similar.
Here's a quote from one of the founders, Helena Lumme, L-U-M-M-E, and Mika Manian. Sorry for mispronouncing your names, but oats are one of the most environmentally friendly ingredients for making plant-based milks and other products. And we are currently importing our organic oats from Scandinavia because we cannot find the quality that meets our standard here in the United States. At the same time, U.S. dairy farms are struggling due to slumping milk sales. So we thought, why not come up with a solution that benefits both of us and our planet? That's a really nice, wonderful thing. And it was interesting because when I read that, I thought about our documentary, The Lone Vegan, when you spoke with 200 cattle producers in Yerington, Nevada.
Oh, good memory, Gary.
And when they approached you with, what are we supposed to do with our land and our farms? You said, grow teft.
Yeah. They were basic. They basically believed there was nothing that they
could do
on that land except grow cattle. And it was ridiculous because, sure, the land looked kind of dry and barren, but they were bringing in the food to grow the cattle. It wasn't like this area was natural for, they weren't grazing them. It was a feedlot.
So this sounds like a wonderful solution, and
there are lots of solutions out there.
Possibly,
people really want to
and obviously,
improve.
Yeah, far more sustainable.
Yes, and I think they said something about oats being a grain that is
a resilient grain that also provide excellent soil erosion control and reduce the need for herbicides. Oats require much less water than other crops, while almonds, cashews, and or coconuts used for nut-based milks require excessive amounts of the planet's fresh water resources. Obviously not as much as raising cattle, but they require a lot of water. And Hilsa oats are currently grown in Scandinavia with a zero water footprint.
Wow.
Yeah. Hilsa has assembled a coalition of Scandinavian organic farmers, researchers, and environmental experts to support the conversion process. Hilsa will put together a guidebook and a video that will serve as a blueprint for other dairy farms on how to start growing premium oats.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, isn't it?
It's a great story. And it goes on and on and on and on. And you can find it
at thedairyreporter.com.
At thedairyreporter.com or on all the vegan sites.
Yeah, we're all talking about it because it's great news.
Or you can hear about it here on It's All About Food.
Let's go to...
It truly is all about food when you think about it. Such a brilliant...
How many times have I said
that?
It all connects. It is all about food.
It all connects.
Yeah. So I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl. I know I didn't.
I didn't.
But many people did. And in reading about it afterwards, I've caught some of the commercials on YouTube because that's one of the fun things about the Super Bowl, the commercials that come out of it, some of them... are really clever. Like, what was the one you saw where they were all talking in the Boston accent?
Oh, yeah. That was great.
What was that for? Was that for a car or something?
That was for a car.
That was a car commercial. Yeah. Anyway, but there was one commercial that was put out by this awful group called...
How do you really feel about them?
Yeah, they're awful. The Center for Consumer Freedom. They've been around for decades. And they're a conservative group that... in kind of covert ways have been damning things that are healthy and good and promoting things that are not. So they would come up with articles that said that Coca-Cola was good for you, that kind of thing. And they would put down the scientific studies saying that Coke and other sodas weren't good. And they had a variety of different websites. One of them was listed a lot of people from nonprofits, including me. I'm on there when I was on the board of EarthSave, and they made us all sound like we were quacks.
Right. They do that a lot. They just discount.
And what's interesting about the Center for Consumer Freedom is they never disclose where their funding is coming from.
Right.
But you kind of have a feeling.
It's only obvious.
Who it's coming from. It's coming from the products, the companies that they're, whose food they're supporting, whose products they're supporting. Anyway, they had a 30-second spelling bee video. Who saw it? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
And it was kind of clever. They asked the student to spell methylcellulose, and they made it like it was a hard word to say. The child didn't know what it meant, and then the person who told her to spell the word said it was an ingredient in the Impossible Burger and made it sound like it was this synthetic thing, and you don't want to be eating synthetic ingredients. You want to be eating real food like
beef. Well, you don't want to be eating ingredients that you can't pronounce. It was really, they really didn't go out on any limb other than made it sound like because it was hard to pronounce, it was a horrible ingredient.
Yes. And, you know, in some ways, there's some truth to that. But then the Impossible Burger came back with a rebuttal commercial.
But it wasn't the Impossible Burger. It was Impossible Foods.
Who makes the Impossible
Burger?
They
didn't come back and say the Impossible Burger is rebutting. They were sort of on the team of all plant-based alternatives.
Yes, and they came back with a similar spelling bee commercial where the student was asked to spell poop.
Poop. And then they went into a lot of great information about how there's poop in all of the...
Yes, there's fecal contamination in all beef.
Beef.
It was basically what they were saying.
And that also connects with a lot of these flu bugs that are going around now because the
zoonotic diseases come from
poop.
Growing animals in dense conditions where all those bacteria can multiply and get stronger. And
so it truly is all about food. Yeah, yeah, it was clever. Very clever.
And it was clever. But you know what? So there are people that are saying that beef is a real food. And you don't want to be eating a burger that is highly processed because of these synthetic ingredients. And what do we say here at Responsible Eating and Living? We say, yeah, you don't want to be eating beef, but do you really want to be eating processed food of any kind? What's wrong? I mean, I know people love Impossible Burgers and Beyond Burgers, and I'm glad they're out there if they're helping people.
Well, not all
eat
people.
Less
I
meat.
Mean, there's a lot of people that feel the way we feel, that they'd rather have a burger made with millet and mushrooms and beans and it's still and a lot of herbs and spices. And that's kind of where we're at here at Responsible Eating and Living, is we want the least possible processing imaginable in our food.
And we think they're pretty delicious.
They are pretty delicious. But there are people out there that want that burger taste. And so, hey, now they can have it. And so don't let a lot of these beef and these meat companies try and make you feel bad about your choices.
Well, if we were going to do a third 30-second spelling bee video.
Yes.
I would ask the student to spell real.
Yes. Responsible eating and living.
R-E-A-L. Real.
Yeah, because what are we doing really when we're getting people to transition off of the, you know, animal. And that's great. But then we're still going to have the same health problems that we have now.
You know what? I also read another article recently. We haven't talked about this one. But it was one of these titles that pisses me off.
Right.
It was something like, the vegan diet may not be the greenest diet or something like that. And what they were talking about is, meat is a disaster for the environment. I'm glad they said that. But then they started talking about all these different plant foods and how some of them require a lot of water to be grown, or some of them put out more greenhouse gases. And then how some people who eat a lot of fruit are buying fruit that's shipped from all over the world, and the transportation costs involved put out a lot of greenhouse gases, and all of that makes me mad.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's a distraction.
Yes, it's
a distraction.
Fake news.
Yeah, but you know, and they had a lot of links to a lot of science. You know, made it look really good.
Yeah, but it was. But you checked it out, and it was all
ridiculous. No. It wasn't that it was. They're just not telling the whole story, and they're not packaging it in a way that I feel is the most truthful.
Right. Well, how many, I mean, you are a professional vetter. You vet programs like this as a profession. People come to you to get their programs vetted.
Yeah.
And you've seen all of the misleading crap out there, and you've always had to trace it down to its source, and that's what you're an amazing detective in that respect.
You know, I think some of these people believe in what they're telling, that they just don't know the whole picture.
Right. Oh,
and that's like many people, most of us, we only see and understand what's in our own circle.
Right.
For example, people will talk about the value of traveling to other countries just because you see how people live differently and you see things that you didn't experience before or know about before. And all of a sudden, your world just blows up.
Changes.
There's just so much more. Yeah. It changes. Your perspective changes.
Blows up in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
Yeah. In a positive way.
And it's true of medical professionals, too, when they're only taught certain things. So when many of us are talking about preventing disease with food, it's just something that they don't comprehend. They know nothing about it.
But now there are some that we thought would never start connecting the dots between nutrition and healing. Some of these hardcore companies, which we won't name because we don't want to give them any more.
We don't want to plug them.
We don't want to plug them. But a lot of these companies that deal... A lot of these hospitals that deal with cancer patients, for example, who maybe 5-6 years ago would never even admit that food made a difference in mm-hmm. a cancer recovery, which, as you can attest to firsthand, it does. And now they're starting to maybe rethink that. And
yeah, because the evidence is more and more compelling and more of their patients are saying, I want this.
Right. And where you went, we can mention and give a plug to where you went because they've always believed that, and that's the Block Center in Chicago.
Yes, the Block Center. They're outside of Chicago. When we went, it was in Evanston, and then they moved to Skokie.
Skokie,
but
right.
The Block Center is definitely ahead of their time. But back to briefly...
But they were all about food as well, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's why I learned about Ticino. They had a coffee pot. They had a coffee pot brewing, and it smelled like coffee. It tasted like coffee, but it was Ticino, which is actually pretty good for you.
Yeah, it's good. We love it.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, this one article was painting this picture. They were still saying that you don't want to eat meat. I think they meant beef, and I think they were still happy about chicken. I'm not quite sure, but...
Well, China isn't happy about chicken. They're asking their people to stop eating meat, if you can believe that.
Well, ultimately, we'll probably hear more and more of that when people realize the damage that eating meat does.
Right.
But just really quickly, this whole thing about eating meat and climate change, because I don't think people really understand such a simple big picture. So hundreds of years ago, the earth was covered with forests. And then we started cutting down trees to build homes for people and then to build factories. And now we're cutting down more trees because we need more farmland to grow more food. Most of it is food to feed animals, to feed people.
Right.
And so already the earth is out of balance in terms of the carbon dioxide that it was used to taking out of the air and bringing back into the soil through the plants and the trees. And now we're really out of balance because we have factories and cars and all kinds of things that are using
jet airplanes,
fuel that we dig out of the earth that's been sequestered underground. And now we're digging it out at an alarming rate. And we use it too for fertilizers, petrochemical fertilizers, and other petrochemical products. We're bringing all of that out, and it's carbon that's been buried in the earth over millions of years. And now all of a sudden, we're just digging it all out, using it up, and some of that goes into the atmosphere's carbon dioxide, and it's causing this tremendous imbalance and causing the temperatures to rise. And some people will look at the current situation, not adding in what happened already. And they're just saying, oh, it's okay. The amount of carbon that is going into the atmosphere equals the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere because we're just growing plants and putting fertilizer on them. And then the plants take in the carbon dioxide. And but the point is, it's not in balance because we chopped down so many trees a long time ago to take in that carbon. And also we're spewing out so much carbon dioxide. We don't have a balance.
We're imbalanced.
So when people start highlighting plant foods because they might use too much water or put out too much greenhouse gas, it's just not fair. It's not right. If we weren't raising plants to feed animals, to feed people, if that was all gone, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
It wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter. That's why we all have to go vegan.
Oh.
We do.
Yeah.
And we should. And a lot of people are finally getting the message. And but maybe not enough. Maybe we've already reached this point where we can't go back.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm not a scientist. All I know is adopting a plant-based diet helped me. And it helped me my health and my attitude about all things.
Yes, it has. And it's kind of cleared your brain.
It does. It lifts the veil. And I've said that before. And it allows you to connect the dots to see the exploitation that goes on everywhere and how we're all trying desperately to do the right thing and we're being misled. And so that's why folks who want to see the truth and see how we've been misled should really look at adopting a plant-based diet or what some people call going vegan, because everything opens up after that. It all makes sense.
Here's another thing. Mm-hmm. Not all vegan is healthy.
No.
I mean, we know that.
But that's why we're responsible eating and living.
Exactly. You could be living on Oreo cookies and Coca-Cola. They're vegan. They're not healthy.
Right.
And now, I was just looking at the new cookbooks coming out, vegan cookbooks coming out for 2020.
Right.
And I just see like 5 or 6 keto vegan cookbooks.
Keto vegan.
Now, my friend Alan wrote,
isn't that an oxymoron, keto vegan?
Kind of.
Alan Rodinger?
Alan Rodinger, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have him on my Ask a Vegan show, and I've had him on this show a number of times. One day we will meet. And one day he will make us an amazing dinner.
Right.
Or maybe we'll cook together. But he had put out a cookbook.
Several, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. But one of them is a vegan keto diet.
Right.
Because they came out with it just when keto was becoming trendy and they just jumped on it. But now there's keto is like building even more. And so there's more vegan keto diets. The sad thing is that the ketogenic diet, whether it's meat-based or plant-based, is not a healthy diet.
No.
It's based on not eating grains, not eating a lot of carbohydrates, very little carbohydrates, and eating a lot of fat. This
right.
is not good.
No.
So, and it's funny because there's another cookbook, which was the keto baking cookbook.
Right.
So people that are on this diet, they're craving bread. They want to have bread. But they can't have grain, so they'll make a bread with eggs and butter and almonds.
Oh, but this isn't the vegan.
That's not vegan. But that was, I just flashed on that too. But
no, what you're talking about is the Atkins diet, but they don't call it the Atkins diet anymore because he died. So now they call it the keto diet. And I've been on every single diet known to diets. And from a very young age, I did a show. This is the vegan artist's way. So I'll plug my show, Eating Disorder, Eating Dad Order, which was all about how many diets I've been on. And basically, none of them work. Okay, let me repeat. None of them work. People that are, you know, my heart breaks whenever anybody tells me that they're on Weight Watchers. It doesn't work. Maybe for about a month, maybe for 2 months, but it doesn't work because you always go back and do something else. And if it does work and you've been on it your entire life and you have maintained your weight, then you can call me and write me and tell me that I'm full of crap, that it works.
Poop,
that it works. But I was on Weight Watchers. I started at the very beginning of the Weight Watchers trend, and I had to weigh my food, and I went through all of the meetings, and it for a very short time, you lose weight, and then all of a sudden, you can't stand it anymore, and you start going back up. And you find another diet. I was on the egg and grapefruit diet. I was on the watermelon diet. I was on the cabbage diet. I was on the every diet imaginable I was on, and none of them work until I went to a plant-based diet, or what I call a vegan diet, which isn't a diet. It's a lifestyle. And right away, I just cut out animal and everything started to change. That was
it. You were melting.
And the weight just came off. And it came off slowly, and it's still coming off. And I don't know if I'll disappear eventually. But I seem to be stable now. And yet it came off slowly, and I wasn't in a hurry because everything started to feel wonderful as soon as I went on this plant-based vegan lifestyle. It just, my energy went up. Everything was beautiful. I know you've heard it before from other people who have done the same thing. And I'm telling you, it works. All you have to do is rid your diet of animal products. That's it. Just get rid of the animal. And yeah, I mean, you could eat Oreos and you could eat, drink lots of vegan wine and you can drink lots of vegan beer. And, you know, and what is a vegan wine? It's a wine that is made without using any animal products for filtering. And how do you find that out? You go on barnivore.com. So you can eat everything and your whole menu opens up, except, you know, the dead animals on your plate are gone, or the byproducts of the excrement from the dead animals, or the living animals. Anyway.
So the keto diet, even the vegan keto.
But the keto diet is the Atkins diet, and that's the diet that almost killed me. It almost killed me. Because there were cakes and bread that you make from, I did this bit in my show where I ground up pork rinds and I made a bread out of it.
Oh.
It was a joke. I mean, it was a farce, but some people ate it and it put me in the hospital. I mean, it literally, that diet put me in the hospital. So, and your kidneys shut down and there's all kinds of horrible things.
I'm going to think the,
and you have to pee on it. You have
the vegan version is probably better, but still too high.
Which is why I consider it an oxymoron, because it's like, isn't it? I mean, how can you, the thing that puts you into ketosis is the animal fat. So, and you have to be on, you have to be in ketosis when you're on this diet, when you're on this,
Yeah.
So how can that happen? You have to pee on a stick, okay, to make sure you're in ketosis.
Well, a lot of people cheat.
Uh-huh. But how do you do that? What I'm saying is, how do you do that with a vegan?
Well, I think it's the good part of it is not eating processed, refined carbohydrates. So diets like this get you off of eating white flour food, pasta, breads, cookies, cakes, that sort of thing. Except they make their cakes out of like almond flour. But you're not eating grains and refined grains. I think in the vegan keto version, some low carb, well, not low carb, some vegetables are okay, like leafy greens, which are healthy vegetables, but it's
it's not a good diet. I just would say,
but there are a lot of cookbooks coming out because they're trending.
Right. But they've been trending for a while, right?
The keto diet's been going on for a few years, but there seem to be more vegan keto cookbooks.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just noticed it. I thought I'd talk about it.
Right. So anyway, good luck to those folks who are trying to sell their cookbooks. But you really do have to only do one thing, everyone, and that's listen to me. If you want, if you want to lose weight, which I guess a lot of people do,
yep,
then you have to cut out the animal in your life. Stop eating the animal, and you will start losing weight. And you know, I don't think carbohydrates are bad. I really don't. I think carbohydrates are necessary.
Are you a good carbohydrate or a bad carbohydrate?
Yeah, exactly. Are you? I mean, there are bad carbohydrates, I'm sure. But, you know, there's also bad protein. There's good fat and there's good carbohydrates and there's bad. I mean, there's good fat. And that's one of the things that going vegan, informed me of, was that there's good fats out there. You can have fat. Okay, I just went to the doctor. I never go to the doctor, but I just went to the doctor and my cholesterol was great. And, you know, my blood pressure was great. Everything was great. And,
You're not on any medications.
And I'm not on any medications and I eat carbohydrates. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you other than, you know.
Yeah. Well, what we like to encourage people to do is eat as close to whole as possible, minimally processed. So human beings need protein, carbohydrate, and fat. But we don't want to eat refined proteins and refined fats and refined carbohydrates.
Right.
A refined protein is something like a protein isolate, like you see soy protein isolate on some of the veggie meats and plant-based analogs.
Right.
And now there's soy protein isolate, there's pea protein isolate, and there's all kinds of isolated
proteins. But if you get beans and you get quinoa and you get mushrooms and you get herbs and spices,
that's all good.
And you grind them all together and you put them in a patty and you broil it or bake it or put it on a barbecue, it's really good. And we have a lot of recipes like that at Responsible Eating and Living. And I know there's a lot of bean burger recipes out there. It's not like you can't get them at a restaurant. There's this place called Bear Burger here in New York. And Bear Burger has half of their menu, or one side of their menu is vegan and the other side is non-vegan. And so, but I mean, if you really want to go out for that burger experience and you don't want to eat a Beyond Burger or an Impossible Burger, well, they have this great burger patty made with...
They have a few of them. My favorite is the quinoa, chia, and pea patty.
Right.
And then they have a black bean and some other stuff patty.
And, you know, and they put all the fixings on it and you get it on the bun and they have, you know, everything is separate. There's a vegan kitchen and a non-vegan side to the kitchen. So you can even have your fries if you want fries. Sometimes when we're at a Bear Burger, Karen will get this thing called colored sticks, or what is that?
Colored fries.
So they're fries made with the stems of the collard greens. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful things. And yeah, you could throw a bunch of ketchup on it. We were talking today, and we wanted to bring it up, about, you know, there's a lot of fun things to do when you're going out to places like restaurants and you know, this is now a lot of baseball fans out there. So, you know, you're getting ready for pitchers and catchers, I think, have shown up this week at all 30 of the major league ballparks. are starting to get their pitchers and catchers, and people are showing up for spring training, and you know, you're going to start going to baseballs. And I know you started this conversation by talking about the Super Bowl. Well, a lot of people really like baseball, and so they're going to go out and see some games. And you know, there are a lot of really cool things happening at ballparks around the country, and one of them is they're going vegan. And we want to just remind you that there's a lot of, I mean, who doesn't love to go to a ballpark and get a vegan dog or a vegan...
Hot dog! Hot dog! Get your beer here!
Of course, you know, peanuts and popcorn are, well, not all popcorn, but, you know, peanuts are vegan. But a lot of people can't eat peanuts. But there's a lot of really cool vegan food coming to the ballparks. We have a friend, Marty. Marty's Vegan Burgers.
Flying Marty, yeah.
Flying Marty.
He's a retired pilot. And yeah, he started a little vegan fast food restaurant, Marty's Vegan Burger.
And he's going to be, he's at
Citi Field.
He's
where the Mets
at play. Citi Field. And Citi Field made PETA's list of the top 10 vegan ballparks or ballparks that offer vegan food. And so check it out and see if your ballpark has...
You know, this is something that's been going on for a long time. So I spoke with Joanna McCloy back about 9 years ago, and she started in the year 2000 an organization called Soy Happy, and she had a goal of getting vegan hot dogs into all the ballparks. In the year 2000, she started, and when I talked to her 11 years later, she said that there were... She thought there were about 22 ballparks, Major League, that had vegan hot dogs.
Right.
And now we're close to all of them.
All 30 of them, huh?
Almost. 28 out of 30 is what I read.
PETA.
And it's not just hot dogs now. It's a variety of vegan food.
PETA put out a list last year. And number one was the Globe Life Park in Arlington for the Texas Rangers. Number two was Citi Field, New York Mets.
Yay.
Number three was Target Field for the Minnesota Twins. Number four was Oracle Park in San Francisco, my home of the San Francisco Bay Area. And number five was Progressive Field, the Cleveland Indians. Number six was Yankee Stadium, Yankees. And seven was Dodger Stadium, Dodgers. And number eight was T-Mobile Park for the Seattle Mariners. Number nine was Kauffman Stadium, Kansas City Royals. And number 10 was Chase Field, Arizona Diamondbacks. But here's, as Karen mentioned, it's not just dogs. Here's some of the things that are at Citi Field, for example. We already talked about Marty's Vegan Burgers. But there's the Beyond Burgers. There's the Shroom Steakhouse Burgers with melted vegan mozzarella and sautéed mushrooms. There's Beyond Meat Bratwurst. There's Eve's Veggie Cuisine, the Good Veggie Burgers. There's Eve's Veggie Cuisine, the Good Dogs. There's Daruma of Tokyo Vegetable Rolls. There's Edamame and Edamame Dumplings. There's Dole Whip Sundays and Floats. I mean, this
is... Take me out to the ball
game. This is the ballpark. And I know it's too cold to think about baseball right about now, but it's getting close. And so there's a lot of good things happening out there. And so this is also all processed vegan food, except for Marty. I think Marty does his burgers.
Yeah, but he serves the Impossible and the Beyond Burger.
Right.
You can get either.
Right. So so what do? You just, you know, you go out to the ballpark and you have a treat. We talk about treats all the time on this show. And maybe once in a while you get a vegan dog or a Marty's burger or, you know, and you don't feel like you're missing out.
Yeah, you feel like you're one of the crowd.
Right.
And why not?
That's right.
And more athletes are going vegan, so
they've
got to have stuff.
Yeah, there's a great, there's, you know, again, hitting the news, there's a lot of people talking about Joaquin Phoenix's speech at the Oscars. I mean, we've talked about that. But a lot of people are using that as a sign that, you know, it's time. For example, Lewis Hamilton, who is a vegan Formula One champion race car driver. He's praised Joaquin Phoenix's Oscar acceptance speech. And he says that, you know, he says, I think we've become very, well, Joaquin's speech said that he thinks we've become very disconnected from the natural world. Many of us are guilty of an egocentric worldview. We believe that we're the center of the universe. We go into the natural world and we plunder it for its resources. And, you know, his speech went on. And Hamilton, who went vegan back in 2017 for health reasons, praised Phoenix's words. And he wrote on his, I believe it was his Instagram account, "Joaquin Phoenix has led the way for the world here and set such an incredible example. I'm so proud and grateful to know there are people like him with all the success and fame to use his voice for the greater good. I aspire to be able to do this." So a lot of people are taking someone's lead that they respect and they're jumping on that wagon. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people are, you know, of course, coming out and condemning Joaquin Phoenix and condemning the whole, you know, speech that he said. But I'm sure it's people that support the dairy industry.
Or the meat industry. Yeah, there were some dairy farmers that came out and said, "We treat our cows well, you know." And,
yeah. We treat our cows well.
Okay, you treat your cows well as you artificially inseminate them and
hook up a machine to their udders.
And take their, children calf. Away from while yeah. they're screaming.
Right. Yeah. But you've already faced the fire, which is what we called our documentary.
The Lone Vegan Preaching to the Fire.
Preaching to the fire, not preaching to the choir. And so we've experienced it firsthand going up against 200 cattle producers, and we got a lot of really
you answered
the difficult questions, and then you sang the national anthem. And so we know what's out there, we know what people are going to say, we know what they're going to ask, people that are against what we're trying to do. But
you know, a lot of them, I don't want to say that they're bad people, I just want to say that they're misinformed.
Yeah, they're misinformed. And it's their livelihood. And that's why this oat thing...
is a great thing.
Is a great thing.
Can we talk about some of our wonderful recipes?
Yeah, so we took down some recipes and we put up some recipes on the homepage. And one of them is the classic cob, or the new classic cob.
The new classic cob.
Yeah, so the story behind the origins of the Cobb salad varies slightly depending on who you talk to or what cookbook or online source you get your recipe. And most of us will agree that it was named after Robert Cobb, the owner of the famed Brown Derby restaurant in Hollywood. Legend has it that one day Mr. Cobb realized that he had not eaten until near midnight and he was starving. So he or someone on his staff mixed together leftovers found in the kitchen and tossed it all in a giant salad with a vinaigrette dressing. Today there are vegan Cobb versions. I know you, Karen, get a vegan Cobb at
the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, and but it's not the Cobb that I was used to mm-hmm. having, or you know, that this Cobb from the Brown Derby that we're talking about. I used to get the Cobb at a bunch of places. One of them was Perry's in San Francisco and MacArthur Park in Palo Alto. They also had a Cobb similar to this at TGI Fridays. Mm. Okay. And so those were typically made of on a bed of chopped romaine, and they displayed it with these really colorful rows of chopped tomatoes, crispy bacon chunks, cubes of chicken breast, hard-boiled egg, sliced avocado, chopped olives, crumbled blue cheese, and served with a side of red wine vinaigrette. So I invented, or should I say reinvented, my own Cobb salad, classic Cobb. I was able to find many of the vegan ingredients in upscale grocery stores, so most of it was a no-brainer. Although I did need to rethink the hard-boiled egg component, and I came up with a simple frittata, which is a staple in our house and is great all on its own. Or you could chop it up and put it in salad. So that's what I did for the hard-boiled egg component. And I included that in the recipe at Responsible Eating and Living now up on the website. All the cooked ingredients can be made ahead of time and refrigerated or used after cooling to room temperature. And it's great.
It's stunning.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Check it out if you like Cobb salad. Now, we got our blue cheese, a vegan blue cheese, from a place called, the company, Karen has interviewed the owner of the company, is called Cheese Hound, and it's called Grey Day Blue. And who owns Cheese Hound?
Lori Robin.
Lori Robin, right. And so we got the Cheese Hound Blue Cheese at a store in Brooklyn called
Riverdale.
And
it's a vegan cheese shop.
It's a vegan cheese shop in Brooklyn. Now, if you don't live in Brooklyn and you can't get a Cheese Hound Grey Day Blue, there are other vegan cheeses out there in most of your upscale grocery stores or chain grocery stores. You can find it now, especially Whole Foods has a vegan blue cheese. But you don't need to use it, but it does complete the whole experience of the cob because it's got blue cheese on it. Anyway, that's our featured recipe of February, along with the frittata that goes along with it. Now, so it's actually two recipes in one. And but it uses a lot of ingredients that are already made. You just have to heat them up and then chill them. Like, for example, it uses Gardein chicken strips. And you can find Gardein now at Target. I mean, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. You know, you were mentioning, speaking to those 200 cattle ranchers at that event a bunch of years ago. And when we went to the grocery store there, they had Gardein there.
In Urington, Nevada.
Yes, in the middle of cattle feedlot country.
Right. And you know what? You can watch our documentary at Responsible Eating and Living. It's free. It's 70 minutes. And let us know what you think. We are really proud of that work. It hasn't been nominated for an Oscar like a lot of the documentaries out there, but we did it on
a $0 budget.
$0 budget. And with a little camera, and I think it's great work. But the Gardein, back to Gardein, they were the first or one of the first to come out with this chicken strip. And so you get this bag of chicken strips, and at the Responsible Eating and Living website, we have how I prepared them for this. But again, they come with this bag of cruddy, I don't know what it was. It was like this teriyaki sauce. Just throw that away. Don't use that. This is just not, it's, I wouldn't recommend using it. But who knows? Maybe you might like it. The strips themselves, they really do taste just like chicken. And you'll enjoy it. And it's, you know, it's tempeh bacon instead of real bacon or fakin' bacon. But the frittata, I'm really the most proud of this frittata. It's a garbanzo bean flour that I made, and we chopped it up, and it really behaves just like chopped up egg. It's better, obviously, because it's not egg. So anyway, we hope you enjoy the cob, the new classic cob salad from Responsible Eating and Living. We did that just for you. And it's a beautiful picture. Check it out on the website. And it's delicious.
So we also have another new recipe. It's not a new recipe, but I finally just put it up on the website. Purple potato salad.
Yeah, purple potato salad is delicious.
And it's like a classic German potato salad, but it's made with purple potatoes, so it's beautiful.
Yes.
And it's got those anthocyanins, which is what gives the purple potato its color. And I'm not talking about purple sweet potatoes.
No.
I'm talking about purple potatoes. They don't have the same texture when you cook them.
Right.
And the purple sweet potato gets mushy.
Right. And a lot of people are going to be thinking now, because it's February, it's getting close to spring, right? A lot of folks are going skiing, and there's a lot of spring fever is going to be in the air soon. People are going to be going, traveling, trying to get away from the cold, or going to the cold for skiing. And if they're going vegan, what will they eat? Where will they go? How will they survive? Will they have to bring food, or can they go to restaurants? And I just want you to know that a lot of the vacation, the people that are in charge of your vacations, like the cruise industry, which we don't recommend, you know, we're not too thrilled about the cruise industry because they have
it's not very environmentally friendly.
Right. But some people will still take a cruise anyway. They're not going to listen to me. But a lot of the cruise industry is now starting to get some more vegan options for their passengers.
Absolutely. There are vegan cruises now.
There are vegan cruises. So, you know, it's easy to find out who is vegan friendly and who isn't. And, you know, there's a lot of places for winter escapes which are now vegan as well. So I understand that France has a lot of skiing. And I'm not saying you can just take off to France and go skiing, you know. But they are doing some great packages for vegan ski retreats and vacations.
Wow.
So one of them is called, if you fancy the snow but are seeking something more adrenaline-inducing than yoga, how about a ski trip to France? This winter, UK-based ski chalet company Ski Beat is launching its first ever vegan weeks. Adding to the usual fun and excitement of a ski trip, these unique getaways will make the experience even more special for guests looking to avoid animal products. And it goes on. And
that's really nice. Can I just say one thing? I skied in France a long time ago when I lived in France. And skiing in Europe is very different than skiing in the United States. And I'm not going to say one's better or worse. And maybe it's different now. This was the early 90s. But they didn't understand standing in a line waiting for a lift.
Right.
Okay? There was no polite line that people waited on to get on the ski lift. It was just a massive huddle of people somehow finding their way on the lift. There was no queue. There was no line.
Oh, it's hysterical. Also, Disneyland.
Hey, you know what, Gary? We're running out of time.
Disneyland, California offers a plethora of delicious plant-based treats. So that's great.
They do a lot of good things. They do gluten-free. They do plant-based. Yeah.
And of course, Vegas has got a lot of
lots of vegan things
vegan
happening.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And the UK. The UK seems to have a lot of vegan restaurants.
Yeah, we
got to
get
our
there.
Friend,
and then we'll report
John and
back.
Chris. Who tell us the UK is very vegan friendly.
But you know what? We really have to go, Gary. I know you love talking about food, but I'm going to have to like pull the plug on you right now because we are totally out of time. So thank you for joining us today. I hope you've had as much fun as we have.
Talking about food.
Talking about food. Okay, everybody.
Have a delicious week.